ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
A few months ago, the MacArthur Foundation awarded UWM theater professor Anne Basting a fellowship to continue the outstanding work that she's been doing with people who have memory problems. Well, that fellowship is known around the world as a genius grant and received a no-strings-attached $625,000 gift to continue her work. On this edition of UWM Today, we catch up with Anne to see how her life and her work have changed and evolved since receiving the award that has literally made news around the world. Welcome, Anne. Great to have you with us.
It's always good to be here.
And always is a good word because you've been a frequent guest. You and I were just comparing notes. It's been more than a decade that you've been in and out of the studio as your work has evolved, not just here in Milwaukee, but now truly around the country and even around the world.
Well, it's great to come and share news of sort of my latest crazy idea and as they roll out across Wisconsin and then internationally now.
Fantastic. So you got the award from MacArthur Foundation in September. What's life like today? Any different?
Well, you know, it's been waves of response, I think. Really, the first part, you know, I think I bruised myself, pinching myself, trying to, is this real? Is this happening? And then sort of settling into the realization of sort of the platform I can be on now and how to dream bigger and take the projects bigger and encourage the students I work with to think bigger as well.
Let's give our listeners who may not be as familiar with some of the work that you've been doing a quick synopsis. What exactly is it that caught the eye of the MacArthur Foundation folks down in Chicago to put you among, I think there were 26 fellows, if I'm not mistaken, 23 or 26 this past year, people drawn from really some interesting, amazing niches that are doing great things around the country. What is the specialty that you point to when you describe your work?
Well, and I'll also back up and say that's part of the pinch me component of this is just the caliber of the people that I find myself in company with, which is remarkable. And I spent a good long time going through and just really being overwhelmed and impressed by the other fellows. And I think maybe, you know, I don't know what caught their eye, but it's been about 20 years of just tenacity on my part, I think, of just insisting that the arts and aging can transform the way we understand and care for older people and the way every single person, if we're lucky, is going to get older. And so it also can transform the way we understand our own lives. I think there's just a power in the arts as a communicative tool to build community, to build self-confidence and control and resilience, and measuring that and then taking those in new directions and getting them out to all the people who need them, from students to family caregivers to professional staff, all around the care circuit.
And I mentioned at the beginning of the program that a lot of your work is with people who have issues remembering the good times, the bad times, either Alzheimer's, dementia, other dysfunctions of their cognitive skills that make them different than the way they were before.
It's true. And I think, you know, I started out there using improvisation as a technique with people with dementia and finding that it was essentially that very simple, I think illusorily so, simple shift from the expectation of memory to the expectation of imagination, that once you make that shift, people with memory loss can really open up and expand their ability to communicate emotionally and connect with people around them and really understand themselves as well. But in the evolution of the last 20 years, I find that communicative tool, improvisation, where you can use metaphor, you can use words, sound, movement, visual arts in any way, works with people with dementia really up until very late stages. But then it also works backward, all the way to young kids. And so it becomes a community building tool that everyone can use successfully. And now, 20 years later, I'm at a place where I believe that you don't create separate programs for people with dementia. You create integrative programs so that they can be connected back into their communities. And that's really been the bulk of the work in the last couple of years.
Like a lot of people, I've had family members who have developed memory issues. A mother who suffered dementia after a stroke, aunts, uncles who in a variety of different ways were not able to be the same person in terms of having the recall that they did before. And I'll never forget, Anne, talking to you a few years ago as I was describing my own personal situation. I felt a lot of frustration that I couldn't break through to someone I loved in the way I used to. And after hearing you describe the ways in which we can celebrate the person that's in front of you, I changed from frustration to appreciation for what I had. I have to thank you publicly for a gift that I didn't have before I began to think a little bit more about what was in front of me.
And that is exactly why I do what I do so tenaciously for 20 years. The reward of hearing those stories is just overwhelming. And when you can bring people back into an emotional connection after they've feel this grieving of separation where you can't reach each other, that the arts are really a tool to do that.
How did you figure out in the first place that the arts would be this key that could unlock the other person that is in front of you?
You know, it was really volunteering. The experience of going into a nursing home and volunteering and trying some different theater techniques to work with people with Alzheimer's and realizing that reminiscence, although, you know, it has its purpose and it's effective for some people, it's not effective for all people, and it can create a sense of shame and distancing when you can't access memory. But if you just shift over into improvisation, which, you know, my theater background as both a theater artist and a theater scholar, I felt very comfortable in that space. And I also find that uniquely, for some reason, I am a good translator of that experience. I can translate it to academics. I can translate it to frontline workers. I can translate it to students. And so that's been sort of a unique skill that I've had, is to share that.
Describe what happens in the Time Slips program that you had working in nursing homes.
So that early improv work that I did really was the basis for Time Slips, which I ended up calling it that because it's nonlinear. Time slippage of time, circularity of time, the importance of sort of linear plot and the chronological order of memory goes away when you're really playing with words and language and communication. So it's an improvisational experience where now we talk about it being on three levels. You can do it by infusing improvisation into your everyday relationships. You can infuse it into programming, which is what most people think of when they think of the time slip storytelling, like we'll schedule this once a week, or, you know, and you'll do it for an hour and you'll gather people in a circle and then you give a prompt of some sort and then you just ask open-ended questions. What do you think of this? What do you want it to say? What do you think it means? What sounds do you hear? You know, you're really creating a story out of open-ended questions, which in itself is an art to learn how to ask those questions. We've come to call them beautiful questions because they open up a sense of discovery between people that have no right or wrong. You're sharing sort of this road of discovery together. And then the third component is the work that I probably love the most now, which is these large-scale community-building projects that take on, like, the Odyssey, when we did the Penelope Project for 2 years, or the Islands of Milwaukee Project, which we used beautiful questions with people living alone at home or in the Meals on Wheels program. And now I'm working on one in Kentucky and Tennessee that's all inspired by the story of Peter Pan.
Tell us about that.
there's too much to say.
Is there going back? Can we be young again?
Well, it's really it's just loosely inspired by Peter Pan. It's really an investigation or a joint discovery of the value and meaning of childhood at any age. So it's kind of looking underneath the myth and saying, what is it that we so want to keep in childhood to take with us, that myth is so powerful. And we do, we break the story into about six parts. But that's become almost a model of the work now of these community. It's called Creative Community of Care, is the training model that TimeSlips does now on this larger scale. And what we do is pick prompts. So like right now, we're doing 50 nursing homes in the state of Wisconsin, and we worked with six museums across the state to come up with a creative care guide where there's prompts for creative conversation, creative storytelling, and then these creative projects. There's 100 prompts in there. It's really incredible, inspired by the National Historic Cheesemaking Center, the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, the Museum of Wisconsin Art, the, Madison Children's Museum, and Circus World, and the Maritime Preservation Project from the Historical Society.
So a lot of the places that older people may have visited or encountered at one point in their life left some sort of impression or memory with them. The key here is to go back and open that door again.
Well, and just like I said about how you use the arts to bring a person with memory loss or a person with disabilities living in a nursing home in the state of Wisconsin back into connection with their community in a meaningful way. So we're doing it by encouraging the staff of the nursing homes to connect with family, connect with volunteers, and connect with these cultural institutions that had meaning for people throughout their lives. And in Kentucky and Tennessee, it's the same thing. We're encouraging and teaching the art of partnership with cultural institutions. There, we're doing all rural care communities. In Wisconsin, it's a blend. And our vision is really to transform these places that are predominantly seen as health institutions into cultural centers for their communities.
You know, when I was working through my mother's illness, as she was in a nursing home, I'll never forget one of the physicians we talked to, who works almost exclusively now with folks who are in residential settings, many with memory problems. He said, "You know, my goal is to make sure we don't snow the patients." And I said, "What do you mean, snow the patients?" He said, "There are so many drugs that can be administered now that just, you know, put people out, you know, out on the tundra, you know, where they're not going to be loud, they're not going to be noisy, they're not going to cause any problems." He said, "But they're not living. They're not living." And I heard that right around the same time I became more aware of your work, and I thought, you know what? How wonderful that you're still bringing life out of these people who might otherwise be pushed aside and said, you can't contribute anymore.
Well, it's a real initiative from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to reduce the use of antipsychotics, psychotropics, which really are just deadening people to make them compliant in institutional settings. Or, you know, even now they're prescribed for people trying to keep people at home. So they're really kind of deadened and into a bit of a zombie state, frankly. And CMS is really trying everything they can to reduce that. And these kind of cultural and meaningful programming are seen as a way to open people up and connect them back again and reduce the use of those antipsychotics.
Is it possible that you could measure the impact of the work that you're doing through these interactive programs and measure whether or not people are indeed happier? Can you quantify it in some way?
You know, we try, of course. there's well-being measurements that we use. There's, I think the real key that I would love to do a large-scale study is reduction of depression. That has some real biomarkers with it, and is also related to a reduction, an economic benefit, and a reduction of medications. I think affect and communication. But I think that at the end of the day, my biggest concern is quality of life. We're mortal. we want, I think the greatest fear of dementia is that our lives become meaningless and purposeless. And that's the business that we're in, is giving people back access to meaning and purpose. And that families feel that, and staff feels that too. So whatever intervention we're doing is also not just for the person in the nursing home, the person with dementia, but the people wrapped around them in the relationship of care as well.
I have a friend whose father is sadly going into the deeper parts of Alzheimer's right now. And she's told me that she's used some of the techniques that she's learned from you in terms of what she's seen in stories and other descriptions of your work. And she said it's just remarkable how surprising moments can suddenly appear with someone you love who you thought is no longer there. And suddenly one of those prompts that you mm-hmm. described a little while ago pulls the shade up.
Yeah. And you never really know which one that it's going to be. You know, people think, oh, that's I've had some people's response be, oh, it's demeaning. I don't want to use that picture. And because, you know, someone was very serious their whole lives and they aren't going to want to play. And I just, you know, maybe the person is desperate for play. And when I teach this to students and to other people, I just say, never stop inviting. Just always open the invitation for participation and give them the option. And if they don't respond, then that didn't work that time. But always open and invite someone.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Anne Basting. Anne has been a frequent guest on our program because I just love the work that she's doing. and she's a swell person, too. But we're focusing today on what life is like for her a few months after becoming a MacArthur Foundation Fellow, really an absolute treasure of a award or a recognition. Anne received a $625,000 no-strings-attached gift or award from the foundation to be able to continue the work that she is doing, in this case, a lot of work with people with memory issues. And let's talk about that life. You said it was hard to believe when you got it. You pinched yourself. Are you doing different kinds of work? Are you starting new projects with the resources that you now have available with this wonderful license to go forward?
I think, you know, if I have a downfall, it's that I have too many ideas and I try to do them all at once. And I think, you know, that's exhausting and not always efficient. So
you mean you're not just multitasking?
I'm multitasking as fast as I can. But, I think what this process is doing right now is allowing me time to figure out, particularly with time slips, how to grow it. I mean, our training is online, and we have certified facilitators in 42 states and 12 countries. We have tremendous assets and models. We're evidence-based. We have so much, but our goal is really to become normal practice in care settings. And so to improve the lives of people with memory loss and people working with them. So how do we do that most efficiently and scale it up strategically, and what do we do?
So it becomes embedded in the way that these
homes take care of people. Yep. That's the goal. I describe it as pouring it into the water of care, that these techniques should just be taught as regularly as hand washing.
you talk about setting up these types of experiences in other states and other countries. Is the United States different from other countries in terms of how we connect with our older folks who are losing their memory?
You know, it's really interesting to me. I feel like our health system is very crisis-oriented. So our strength is when you get a terrible diagnosis. And boom, we're running. We're ready to go. And we're off to the races and we're doing really incredible things. We're not so great at integrating kind of community and public health and prevention. And that's where I see other countries a little bit further ahead of us in integrating the arts, because the arts are really best used in that mode, in the community building, community health, public health, social connectedness type realm. And so sometimes I feel like we are doing great work here because of our, I think, innovative groundwork. It's in, you know, innovation is in the water in this country. But the systems, we have a little bit more of a push and a tension with the systems that we operate in because of that.
Let's talk a little bit about how the work that you've been doing at Peck School of the Arts at UWM affects students. How do you bring a UWM student to the table where you are playing with these and experimenting with these new ideas? What sort of education are they getting today that may be a little bit different than before you came on the scene?
You know, this, I really am so excited about this component of it because I see what I've done with Time Slips in terms of social entrepreneurship, of really innovating for social good and making it sustainable and building an organization that can do that. And so what I've learned from my work with Time Slips, I'm bringing back into the Peck School of the Arts. We got approved, and it's now up and running, a certificate, undergraduate certificate in arts and social entrepreneurship, which provides a series of experiences for students that allows them to sort of start with service learning in their coursework. And learn about sort of the fields of social service, of health, and different fields like that. And then also build their skills as artists and then figure out how they can apply those skills as artists to working to solve some of the social challenges of our time. In placements, year-long placements that we call student artists in residence programs. Up until this point, because it's my strength, those students have really been placed in aging services settings. So we have three students living in care communities right now in exchange for room and board for a year. We've got Ian McGibbon at East Castle Place, who I think talked with you as well.
Yeah, was a guest on this program.
Yep. Aaron Whitney, who's at High Point, who's a visual artist as well. And then Thorin Kettleson, who's out at Luther Manor, who he's an acting BFA student in the theater program. And their experiences are just incredible. And then there's a second model that's not live-in, but they receive a stipend for the year from their host site. Molly Hessler is working at St. John's, and Ariel Pena is working with interfaith programs for older adults.
Was it difficult to get a 18 or, well, in this case, probably a 20, 22-year-old, 23-year-old to pick up and embed themselves among 70-year-olds and 80-year-olds? Because our society glorifies youth. Everything that's young seems to be better. Did you have to do any arm twisting to say, hey, let's try this?
You know, we had three sites and three students who were interested, and it just worked perfectly. They are unique. I think they're mature, but I got to tell you, a year of free room and board is pretty enticing. And as Aaron said, you mean my food is free for a year? And also at High Point, they created an artist studio for her. She has her own studio that's all stocked, and she has open studio for older people. I mean, the skill sets that these students are developing are really invaluable. And we meet monthly. I meet with them monthly, and we share stories. And I have to say it's one of my most rewarding teaching experiences is just hearing them talk and support each other. One of the stories I love was Molly, where I said, I asked them what their challenge was. And she said, you know, I'm funny. I relate to my friends through humor. And my challenge is I have to figure out what's funny to an 80-year-old. I don't know. And I'm like, you're going to find out. This is going to be awesome. And she's really blossomed with the program. So I'm excited about it.
How do the older residents react to having these much, much younger people working in their midst?
You know, I think it took them a while to figure out that they were living there. Aaron talks about this moment of discovery where they said, wait a minute, we see you all the time. Are you living here? And then there was a moment where they thought, Are you okay? Are you? Do you need help that you live in a place? No, I'm an artist. I live here for you, to bring the arts to you. And she said they also started trek, because she bikes from High Point up to campus. And they knew she was there when her bike was there. And so they kind of keep track of her and welcome her. And it's as though she has a couple hundred grandparents now. It's kind of great.
That's true. What a great story. And you know, does that boy ever break the stereotypes that the old are over on this side and the young are here and there's not much intersection between the two?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they're learning a ton. You know, I was actually just creating a presentation. I'm really – this is another thing that happened. I get these speaking requests, and I'm going over to London to speak at the Royal Society for Public Health. And I said, you know – For research in aging and the arts, we often only look at the impact on the older people. And really, we're offering a gift to everyone else. And we really need to look at the impact on younger people and the benefit to younger people by bringing them back into relationship with older people, with a life course perspective for themselves. It gives them a different view of their own lives, as well as other people and wisdom that they, and life experience that they wouldn't have had exposure to.
You know, you're very unique. Not only are you the only MacArthur Fellow in UWM's history, but I believe only one of two people in Milwaukee who've received this award. Will Allen of Growing Powers is the other wonderful asset in the community, a wonderful gentleman doing his great work with urban farming. Do you ever get a chance to connect with other MacArthur Fellows or geniuses around the country? Do they have a convention of geniuses?
Wouldn't that be fun? They hold a retreat. It'll be in May of this year's cohort, and then it's a 5-year fellowship. So the folks who are leaving will meet as well as sort of an exit retreat, and so we'll get a chance to sort of overlap with people and ask them about how did this fellowship work, you know, what's next, and as well as meet the people in our cohort. So it's a really great opportunity.
Wow. And so 4 more years after this year for you to continue to use the resources that have been handed to you to make your gifts flower.
Yeah. And, you know, I can invest some of it so my kids can go to college. There's that.
and you've got a chance to think and to catch your breath and to think up more ideas that will fill your day 25 hours a day, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, really figuring out how to embed this so I can bring the students on the journey with me, because connecting the work I do with Time Slips and across the state of Wisconsin and then internationally with the work that's starting to build with the Student Artist in Residence program is a part of where I really want to invest my time.
Well, Anne, we are so proud of you at UWM and here in Milwaukee for doing great, great work. The most important thing isn't the fellowship. It's that you're doing such life-changing work that really impacts people both going through the programs and then folks like me, relatives of people with memory issues who see how we can change the way we interact with the people that we love. So thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure.
And it's just, you know, one stop. We're going to have you back on because you have so many ideas. We'd love to hear.
I forgot to tell you about a big one. So well, next time.
Next time we'll do that. And I want to hear about that trip to London and hear what folks on the international stage think of your work. Thanks so much.
Yep.
Anne Basting, UWM's Genius in Residence, MacArthur Fellow, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.